Welcome to Booked, a game that pokes its grubby fingers through the stained glass windows of great literature. Or is it the stained glass grates of window literature? Gunter Glass, Tom Paine and Roger Casement. Our panel today, Miles Kington, one of the funniest men in Bath and quite a laugh, having a stand-up wash in a red bucket, and Dilly Keane, actor-singer and one of the very few writers in the country whose name rhymes with Graham Greene. And competing for the very forward prize, which is normally given to a six-year-old who can do calculus, Roger McGough, one of the few British poets who was a household name, apart from Glyn Maxwell House and Simon Armitage Shanks. And with him, Mark Thomas, who I recently saw described as a progressive comedian, which means he wears great coats and buys Gentle Giant albums. So, that's the cast of characters. Let's plunge into the plot. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a literary vehicle, like Noddy's Little Car, or Big Ears' all-terrain, four-wheel-drive, diesel-powered Land Cruiser with a bell on top that goes tinkle-tonkle. All you have to do is describe the vehicle without using real names or impersonating the sound it makes, breaking the speed limit on the Okehampton bypass, because that'd be too easy. We've got 1 minute exactly. Miles and Dilly start now.
Well, it's written by C.W. Audrey, the Rev, and it's the lead engine in
that. Thomas the Tank Engine.
Very good.
And this is the vehicle that appears in Wind in the Willows, and it's...
Toad's car?
Yes.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the vessel...
Submarine.
Yes, whose?
I don't know. this is what a lot of prisoners of war got out of. And it's...
A wooden horse?
Yes.
This is from Douglas Adams' great hitchhiking saga. It's the actual, the space, I'd never heard of this before.
30 seconds.
I don't know.
No, carry on then.
This is what a small boy rode when he advised his mother not to go down to the end of the town if you never go down with me.
Oh, God.
By A.A. Milne.
A.A. Milne, yes. oh, God.
Took great care of his mother.
10 seconds.
Only three.
No, can't
James,
remember.
James, Morrison, Weatherly, George, Dupree's tricycle.
Was it? Oh, well done.
I think we should have extra
seconds. This is actually one of your C.S. Lewis.
I'm afraid time's up. I've got to be hard, you see. I know. What was it anyway?
I'm not telling you.
Right. Roger and Mark, off you go.
Mark, this one's a famous Duchess, real live Duchess, writes
Duchess
books.
Duchess of York's helicopter. This is a bird and a feline friend and a mode of transport, and it's a colour as well.
Yellow. No,
it's a bird and a feline.
Cat.
And
yes, the cat and the bat and the cat and the canaries.
No, and it's not a canary.
The owl.
Yes.
The owl and the cat went to sea in a beautiful pea green boat.
Pea green boat.
And this is a certain vehicle that at midnight the clock struck and she ran down the steps and got into
a carriage. A Cinderella's pumpkin.
Pumpkin coach.
Right, lovely.
Exactly.
This is a nanny who sang with just a spoonful of sugar.
Sugar, yes.
And she had something to keep the
an
rain.
An umbrella.
Off. Lovely.
And this is chap went around the world in 80 days.
Phineas Fogg's balloon.
Exactly.
This is an Indian wench's mode of transport.
Pocahontas canoe.
No, but it's nearly there. It's nearly there.
Hiawassa's.
Yeah, it is.
Is that lady's?
Yeah, it's her. It's her.
Minnehaha's.
No, it's the first one.
The first one's outboard motor.
Yeah.
Yes. And this is what they sail down the river in. Sort of a trinity of gentlemen.
Times
three men in a boat.
Yes.
Well done. We almost ran out of cards there. It was so good. Now, the next round, each of the panellists can be given a book title. All they've got to do is rewrite the beginning and the ending with some reference to the style of the writer or the book. This is a bit like being a ghostwriter for William Shakespeare, except he wasn't a male model who thinks hung participles are something you see a doctor about. Boom, boom. Roger, we've given you On the Road, Jack Kerouac's seminal novel of hitchhiking, drugs and adjectives. What have you done with it?
Right, this is Jack Kerouac with a stinking cold. I first met Dean not long after my wife and I split up. I'd just gotten over a serious illness that I won't bother to talk about, except that it involved lumberjack shirts and the habit of running words together. With the coming of Dean Moriarty began the part of my life on the road. .. What a stroke of luck it was all those years ago, bumping into Lucille Ball in the deli outside MGM Studios. I was a good-looking guy and hungry for success. I showed her the novel. Scrap it, she said. Who needs literature? Why not write for TV? Big bucks. So I did. A glittering career that spanned Dallas and Dynasty. Beatnik, Schmietnik. What the hell?
Mm-hmm. Miles, you've got the Book of Genesis, a family saga involving that well-known firm of solicitors, Firmament and Void.
In the beginning, God created Heaven and Earth, PLC. And he looked on it and saw that it was a brand leader in its field, but as yet there was no product. So therefore he created a product research department, and the product research department came up with product design projects such as light and dark and day and night and water and dry land and the firmament and rugby league. And God said, I like them all except rugby league. And now, many years later, by this time, Heaven and Earth PLC had known good years and bad years. Especially it had known bad years when a flood had covered the entire Earth and all the stock of Heaven and Earth PLC had been badly water damaged in the catastrophe. And there being no insurance companies, they'd been forced to hold a flood damage sale and start all over again. But all in all, things had not gone badly and the shares had done well. And every year, apart from the flood years, there was a small dividend. And God looked on his staff, who were called the Israelites, and said, you have done well. And there was no answer. And there was a sign on the Israelites' door saying, closed for business due to unscheduled exile in Egypt. Coming soon, Exodus.
Mark, you've got If by Rudyard Kipling, recently voted the nation's favourite poem, but only because everybody thought it was the Telly Savalas single, If a Picture Paints a Thousand Words, Then Why Can't I Paint You, Baby? Mark.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a couple of ideas, actually, for the beginning of, for the first line, which was Michael Howard's version of If, which is, if you can keep your job while all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. This is what I've gone for in the end. If you can keep your taste when all about you are losing theirs and saying you are poo, if you can be used for sandwich, snack and main course, and to thine self be true. First bit. End line. If you can fill the mouth of a gannet with crispy fritters for their tums, then yours is the fridge and everything in it. And which is more, you'll be spam, my son.
Dilly, your book is The Female Eunuch, a pioneering work of feminist literature soon to be turned into a full-length Disney cartoon featuring the voice of Trevor MacDonald.
Dilly. Well, no, this is actually from the introduction to the 49th edition. People have often asked me why I think The Female Eunuch has been such an important book for so long. Well, I have to confess I was a bit stumperoonied when edition after edition riled off the old hot press. Well, I've been doing a bit of thinking, which is something I still do quite a bit of. I reckon I know why it's still selling. It's the makeup tips. Let's face it, girls, good makeup is a timeless kind of a thing, and while the new gurus have come along like Cindy and Claudia and Naomi, old-timers like me can still impart a thing or two about how to look glam, glam, glam. And the final paragraph from the actual book is, Joan Collins once asked me, Jermaine, how do you keep your youthful looks? Is it surgery or just plain exercise? I said, no, Joan, it's my daily happiness practice. Happiness is like an old shoe. The more you polish it, the more it shines. I do it by being consistently nice to people. She said to me, get away. I said, no, you're right. HRT, that's the ticket.
Now the round we call sound effects. We've turned books into noises, which is easy if you grab them by the spine in both hands and pull hard. What the panel have to do is turn the noises back into books again and listen carefully because all the sounds will give you clues. Roger and Mark, listen to this. It gives you the title of the book.
Kind of animal farm.
Animal farm, yes, right.
But that's a bit of a no, is it?
There was animal noises, and then there was that other.
But the glass breaking.
Crash, bang, pain.
So animals and glass.
Crash. Animals and glass, more or less it, actually.
Glass menagerie?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Miles and Dilly, here's one for you.
Completely stumped.
Sea noises, the gulls, and the horse galloping, then sort of crowd noises, then sort of Latin music in the background.
Not so much Latin.
Caribbean. What was it?
Caribbean music. And there was the, as you said, the seashore, the horse's hooves.
Jamaica Inn?
Yes.
Is it?
Very good.
Right, another one for you, Roger and Mark. This one's either crushingly hard or devastatingly easy. It's a bit abstract. You need to use lateral thinking for this one. It's the kind of ambience of the thing rather than the title.
Right, okay. Because I thought... Okay. So it's tap, dripping, clocks and...
It's a play.
It's a play. It's not Beckett, then?
It is Beckett.
Oh, it is Beckett. All right.
The obvious Godot.
Waiting for Godot?
Godot?
Yeah. Obvious, really, isn't it?
Obvious. Obvious. Yeah. Why? Obvious.
Because
Godot.
They're sitting about waiting.
Yeah.
And they're signing and drumming the fingers. So then, old Pozzo comes in and whips Lucky... Hence the name. And then Lucky starts dancing.
Yeah.
Then there's more waiting.
Yeah.
Obvious.
Mm. I hope ours is as easy.
Yeah, yours is just as easy. And this one's the whole story, Miles and Dilly. So.
That was very neat. It began and ended with bells.
Yes.
So it's not going to be a Quasimodo because, no, that's too easy, right?
It's not a Thomas Hardy, is it? No.
I think you're thinking the wrong area if you're thinking of novels.
Bow and arrows? Twang, bang, one point.
There was not a novel.
Not a novel. The famous five go to an archery contest.
In fact, a poem.
A poem?
An epic poem.
I don't know any weddings poems.
In it.
Hold on, albatross, bang, quang, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Met wedding. Was it a wedding guest? I mean, the 3 years.
The Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Oh. Good God.
Difficult ones this week, aren't they? Yeah. In the next round, we've asked the teams to imagine what would happen if two characters from wildly different books met each other. A kind of literary blind date without the sliding panel. So, Miles, who bumped into who for you?
Well, James Bond and Joan of Arc.
Well, Englishman, and who are you?
My name's Bond, James Bond. And you?
My name is Arc, Joan of Arc.
I've heard of you. You hear voices. Your voices tell you to take over the world.
Oh, no. You must not confuse me with your other enemies. Not everyone is mad and wants to rule the world. I am quite simple. I just want to drive the English out of France.
Oh, out of the Dordogne, you mean? Yes, I can understand that. I believe there are no French left down there anymore. But how do you intend to get the English out? Setting off more bombs in the Pacific, perhaps?
My voices tell me that if I fight for what is right and what is good and what is just, our cause will prevail.
Your voices?
My voices come from God. I believe in them.
Oh, my voices come from a man called M in London. I don't believe anything he tells me, but I do everything he says in my own way.
And how do your voices come to you?
Oh, on this. It's called a mobile phone. You just pick it up, put it to your ear.
How very old-fashioned. My voices come inside my head. I can listen to them while I am using both hands for other things.
Can you indeed? How interesting. You know, you're a very remarkable young woman, Joan.
Yes, I know. That's what the Dauphin said, too.
Did he indeed? And did he attempt to do anything about it?
Oh, yes, he did. He attempted to get my body interested in his body.
I see. And what did your body do to his body?
Well, when he tried to kiss me, this is what I did to
him. Ow! Oh, stop! Oh, you're breaking my arm! Don't! Jesus, leave me! Go!
Had enough?
Yes, oh! Where did you learn to do that?
My voices told me to.
Your voices told you how to kick the heir to the throne of France in the crotch?
Yes, and any other man too. Now, where were we? You were just saying how attractive I was.
I'm sorry, I've changed my mind.
Right, Roger, who's your unlikely pair?
My unlikely pair is Huckleberry Finn, and meets Adrian Mole, aged 13 and three quarters, at a summer camp in the USA. And Mark's playing Huckleberry. Friday, August 7th, Camp Wilderness, back of beyond Nowheresville. Now I know for certain that my parents hate me. Under the pretense of broadening my education, they pat me off to this hellhole. All the other kids are American, fat and freckly, and they despise me because I am intellectual and British. That's why I have been put in a tent on my own. P.S. Although it could be because of the purple spot on the end of my chin.
Well, look in here now. If I ain't monkin' with a real smart fella who can do the reading and writing, mighty pleased to make your acquaintance, sir. My name's Huckleberry Finn.
Oh, I'm Adrian Mole.
Mole? Mole? Ain't that them one of them critters that burrows underground?
Correct, and that's no doubt what I'll end up doing after a few more days in this concentration camp.
Shucks, gee whizzity, Adrian. That's no way to talk.
What do you mean?
You're talking middle-class English, ain't you?
Yes.
Well, that's no way to talk. Hell no, Adrian. You gotta loosen up your vowels and get some of that Missouri backwoods kind of dialect.
Oh, I don't think Pandora would be terribly impressed.
Pandora? She your little sweetheart, is she? Oh,
no.
Well, what you blushing for?
I'm not blushing.
You are, and you should do it more often, too.
Why?
Because when you blush, you can't see that purple spot on your chin. Hey, Adrian, we're going to be real good friends. Yes, I just know that.
I'd rather think not Cockleberry, Knuckleberry.
You just call me Huck.
Huck, because I'm leaving first thing in the morning.
That's a mighty fine idea, Adrian. When my pal Tom Sawyer arrives, what say we hightail it out of here, build a raft and sail down the Mississippi.
Great idea, Huck. Now, if you'll just excuse me for a few minutes, I need to finish writing up the day's events in my diary.
Sure thing. You just carry on. I'll just mosey outside and catch a few skunks and run you up a real nice pair of jockey shorts.
Right, on to Dilly. Who have you got?
Well, unfortunately, ours never meet, but they write to one another. It's, Daniel Quilp from the Old Curiosity Shop and Helena Hanf from 84 Charing Cross Road. First letters from Helena.
Gentlemen, I'm intrigued by the name of your retail store, the Old Curiosity Shop. It sounds so quaint. Do you by any chance sell antiquarian books? I am a poor writer with tastes above my station. Very truly yours, Helena Hanf.
Dear madam, in reply to your letter, we can supply you with all the antiquarian books you need. Don't worry about the money. I can lend you some at very reasonable rates. Yours faithfully, Daniel Quilp.
Dear Mr. Quilp, what joy, what rapture. The boys... the books arrived safely. Will you please translate what I owe you into dollars? I am in a transport of delight. Yours, Helena.
Dear Miss Hanf, I know what you mean. I had a boy transported once, and I was delighted. Think nothing of the debt. It's a delight to lend to a literary lady with prospects like yourself. Yours, Daniel Quilp.
Dear Daniel, may I call you that? I have heard that rations in London, England, are very low, so I am sending a food parcel to you and your wife. In eternal gratitude, Helena.
My dear Helene, I scarcely know how to thank you for the parcel. Well, it's time now to call in the debts. What method of payment do you propose? If you have a daughter, maybe you could send her across in settlement to be my wife, my little cherry-cheeked, red-lipped wife, when the first Mrs. Q is gathered away. If not, come yourself, or I'll bite you. Quilp.
My dear Daniel, my, how your letter made me laugh. You English are so quaint. Fondest love to Mrs. Quilp, with hopes for her full recovery. Sincerely, Helena.
Telegram. Arriving New York, steam packet from Southampton, 9 a.m. Jaws in excellent working order. Have money or daughter ready. Quilp.
And finally, Mark, who's your odd couple?
This is Ophelia from Hamlet. Is there another one? I don't know. A woman called Titty, who is from Swallows and Amazons, who unfortunately named, I think. But they meet. And, this is just before an evening out at the Chippendales. Golly, Ophelia. I've never been to a male dancing review before. It's frightfully exciting. Well, they sing songs, you know, the sort of songs you can join in on with choruses, you know, ging-gang-gooly-gooly-gooly-gooly-watcha, ging-gang-goo.
My dear friend, I was once as innocent of country matters as you.
Innocent in country matters? I think not. I can start a fire by rubbing sticks together and spot cuckoo spit at 10 yards, actually. So there.
I refer to the other sex. Men.
Oh, I do know you had a horrible time of it with Hamlet. Mm. But if a boy upsets me, I know what I would do.
I am a ready student for any advice on the art of love and the lessons of amour. Pray tell, what ignoble deceit would you perform to level the anguish of your heart?
I'd rub his face in the mud and tweak his ears till he cried like a big blubby baby.
I'd as lief I did tweak his doublet and hose.
Well, I'd always thought that boys were rather stupid twits with porridge in their heads and conkers in the pocket.
Shh. Here comes the first dancer.
Golly.
Now that is doublet and hose.
You could certainly start a fire by rubbing two of those together.
You know, I think I'm going to enjoy this being single. Grind it, big
Get
boy!
Him off! Get him off!
And for the next round, we sent expensively trained BBC staff into the street with a microphone and a sack full of books. They asked members of the public to describe the books without giving away the title, which was difficult because most of them were librarians. All the panel have to do is guess which book or literary work they're talking about. Miles and Dilly.
Contains several murders.
But Orson Welles was inspired by it.
The play's most memorable line is probably, oh, oh, oh.
It's a board game set in Venice and Cyprus.
The pillow talk goes horribly wrong.
A marriage is destroyed by a
tissue of circumstantial evidence.
The O.J. Simpson trial.
A gift.
And an opera.
Yes.
There's a clue, Dilly. Venice and Cyprus. And O.J. Simpson trial. And Orson Welles, who made a film called God, it's I have to do all the work on
Citizen
this.
Citizen Kane.
No, Othello.
Othello.
I think. Doesn't Othello move from Venice to Cyprus? I think it's Othello.
Othello, it is. Yeah. Roger and Mark. Roger and Mark.
It's set in the home counties.
Farmyard animals.
Lots of dirty bits.
One of the characters is fond of gambling and girls.
Pub outing.
TV version based on rugby league.
It's a journey.
A cathedral town.
The author borrows ideas from more than one Italian.
A wonderful opportunity for a free supper.
Franklin, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Rhett Butler.
Right, so there's Rhett Butler.
No, there isn't.
No, there isn't Rhett Butler. Okay.
Because he didn't say frankly.
Did he not?
He said Franklin.
All right, I'm fine. Good.
So it's set in the home counties.
It's set in the home counties. Yeah. There's a cathedral town. So that'll be sort of...
Salisbury, Winchester.
Kind of Winchester.
Franklin, my dear.
Franklin, Winchester. Winchester, Franklin, Chichester. Is it that kind of...
Dirty bits.
Dirty... Oh, there was...
Dirty bits. Yeah, rugby league.
There was a dirty bits in rugby league.
Franklin, my dear.
Franklin. There's a clue there, isn't there?
There is.
Okay. Franklin. Right.
Borrows ideas from Italians.
Good dress sense?
Could be.
No. Borrows ideas from Italian.
Begins with the.
The.
Ends with tails.
Canterbury tails.
Hey. Canterbury tails, yes.
Oh, dear.
Good clues. I think you're better at this, actually.
Good clues.
Yeah. We didn't get the rugby league bit.
It turned into a show based on some people going on a train to a rugby league match, written by Alan Plater. Right. Miles and Dilly. Here's a hard one.
Yoga, transcendental meditation and trampoline.
But you wouldn't read this in a crowded train.
Lust. A tale of apprentice butchers.
A lecturer.
And a bungling policeman.
Murder. One of the main characters is called Judy.
Blown up out of all proportion.
Drink.
The leads were taken by a famous comedy duo.
And we have a wife that goes missing.
Burying the evidence.
It wasn't pussy down the well.
Perversion.
It wasn't pussy down a well. That's...
Butchers, I've got...
And yoga.
Genie, inflation, balloons, not crowded, trains, comedy duo.
Ulysses.
What about the blown up out of all proportion? That's a kind of puna.
Metamorphosis.
No.
Balloons. Blown up. Inflation.
Big balloon.
Inflation. Big balloon. Barrage.
I think Mark knows what it is.
Yeah, I think it's wilt. But
it is wilt. It is. Finally, Mark and Roger. Here's a hard one.
There's an ursine collector.
Sacred and profane memories.
Catholicism.
Alcoholism.
Some wine drinkers compare their wine to leprechauns, swans and unicorns.
Two theatrical nates are connected with the book.
The destruction of an aristocratic line.
Dreaming spires.
Morocco.
And a World War II setting.
Come again.
Come again is Germany.
Yes, return to...
Return of something, isn't it?
In a way.
Okay.
What about the...
Morocco?
The Morocco. They're in Morocco.
Catholicism and alcoholism.
Could be anything.
Oh, it does sound like a Graham Greene novel, doesn't it?
It's another Catholic novelist. It's not Graham Greene. It's another Catholic novelist.
Here's Paul Reed. Evelyn Waugh.
Return.
Return. War. Coming back.
Coming back.
Coming back
from the war.
Coming back.
Zender. Zender.
Everyone in the audience is saying,
Brideshead Revisited.
That would be Brideshead Revisited.
Yes. Very good.
Now it's our final round, the climax of the show. Stop the plot. It's simple. All the panellists have to do is think of a line that will chuck a spanner in the works of a carefully crafted literary edifice. For example, no famous five, you can't go to that island. So, Mark, can you think of a plot to stop?
Yeah, this is the plot of 1984 by George Orwell. The time was 12:05. The date was the 1st of January, 1985.
Delia, have you got one to stop?
This is from Delia Smith's book of summer cookery. I'm sodded, I'm off to Sainsbury's.
Roger.
This is Metamorphosis, Franz Kafka. Hello, Rent a Kill. This is Mrs. Samson.
Miles.
I just wanted to put a stop to the Hound of the Baskervilles. Somebody says, thanks for coming, Mr. Holmes. It just turned out to be a mad Rottweiler. We've had it put down.
We're coming now to the end of the show, but before we go, there's still time for the closing poem. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a poem is quite a revolutionary thing to do by Ian McMillan. But ending a Radio 4 programme with a list of credits isn't. I'd like to thank our panel, Mark Thomas, Dewey Keane, Roger McGough and Miles Kington. Booked was devised by Mark Yobbs and researched by Felicity Goodall. It was produced in Bristol by Rob Kettridge and presented by me, Ian McMillan. No relation. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.